Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:22 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 31st, so last day of the month, and stocks were weak generally. So India really was a standout. It was up over 400 points, a clear upward dynamic. And even though GDP figures came in below expectations, they're still at 13%. So I mean, just think about that. There's no other country in the world, particularly a major economy, growing in double digits, and most are on the cusp of major recessions. And then India has got an inflation rate somewhere around 6.7%. And when you're growing at 13%, then you've got net growth of over 6% if you've got that inflation rate. Then we look at the rest of the world. In the UK, you've got inflation running at 10%, growth about 8% lower than that, and the real potential for a recession. So when we start to compare countries relative to one another, then the Nifty has rebounded quite impressively. It's still hovering here around the 18,000 level, and if it can sustain a move above that area, well, then we're talking about the potential for a pop on the upside. And I thought it was also relevant today that the rupee also rebounded. Now, the rupee has been weak, and of course, we've been in an environment where the dollar has been strong against just about everything, but it is steadying from the 80 level. So that's at least indicative of some interest coming back in. Then we can think about the banking sector. The Bombay Banks Index has historically been a lead indicator for the wider market, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it is above the 45,000 level. So it's still outperforming, and if it can sustain the move above 45,000, this is going to be really very encouraging. Of course, energy prices have been a major component of why India has done better, because they've been buying directly from Russia. They've been buying at a steep discount to what the rest of the world has been. So even if we were to just simply look at the Brent crude price, and we can see that the price has been hovering here around $100, and it is now pulling back from that $100 area, and in a dynamic manner, I might add. But if we just translate that into rupees, well, obviously the weakness of the rupee has been a factor in the continued strength of oil prices, but India's not buying Brent. They're buying directly from Russia at a 30% discount. So instead of paying at around 8,000 rupees, well, they're probably paying somewhere between 5 and 6. And that's back around the upper side of the range that prevailed between 2015 and 2021, which I think that they would conclude is probably okay. But some of the pressure is coming off of the energy sector. So Brent crude has failed to sustain the move above 100, and it's back below that level in here today. And then European natural gas has come down in a dynamic manner 3 days in a row. So I was thinking last week that the first pop above 250 was an exhaustion gap, and it did continue higher from there, so that renewed the acceleration. But accelerations are trend endings, and now we're seeing a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Now, I saw this article earlier on today, and talking about the quantity of water vapor in the stratosphere, and that's an explanation for why the southern hemisphere has had such a cold winter, and it's all to do with the Tonga volcano. So we didn't have an ash plume. Instead, we had a water plume, and a lot of vaporized water ended up extremely high up in the stratosphere. And it's resulted in a significant cold snap in the lower hemisphere, and I guess in the southern hemisphere. And then there is the potential that we could have a cold snap in the northern hemisphere this winter. And there is precedent for that translation effect to occur. So that's obviously potentially problematic, and it's something that we do need to be aware of. That and also the Farmer's Almanac predicts a colder winter this year as well. But I instead think that it's more likely that we're going to have exceptionally volatile trading, because Europe has already filled over 80% of its storage capacity. And when they get to 100%, then they'll have nowhere else to put it. So then that's going to inhibit demand growth. But it doesn't mean that prices go all the way back down. And of course, when then supplies ebb, then they'll have to get back in there and start buying with alacrity. So then we're going to have exceptionally choppy markets. So we saw a massive acceleration. Now it's coming down even faster. It's unlikely it's going to come back below 100. But it could easily come back to 100, considering just how quickly prices rallied with indiscriminate government buying. So, as some of those storage targets have been hit, well, then the indiscriminate part of the buying will ebb. And that's certainly going to translate into less panic. There's a lot of panic in the markets right now about the prospect of Europe being cold this winter. And massive social unrest as a result of that. US natural gas prices are hovering here around the $9 area and have been distinctly non-volatile. So there is certainly the scope, at least, that we'll have an additional move on the upside. Then accelerate energy. Having declined sharply yesterday in line with European natural gas prices, rebounded in here today. And part of the reason for that is, regardless of what happens, it doesn't matter how successfully Europe fills up its storage, that storage was never meant as a replacement. It's there to supplement supply during the winter. And it means that there's going to be a scramble on for floating storage and regasification units. And that's what Excelerate Energy sells. So it was a little bit of the baby being thrown out with the bathwater yesterday, and now we're starting to see it rebound in here today. And I think it was a similar story for some of these LNG companies. Golar LNG also has these regasification units, and it has big LNG tankers. But the share was down heavy for the last 3 days, and then began to steady somewhat in here today. So I think this is the beginning of support being found in the upper side of the underlying trading range. If it can continue to hold here, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then let's just think about stock markets. Well, the Nasdaq continues to encounter resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's been down for 4 consecutive days. In a dynamic manner. It's a very clear unwinding of the short-term overbought condition, which in turn was an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition. But we're still in an environment where the Federal Reserve is hiking rates, is about to accelerate the pace of balance sheet runoff, and liquidity is tightening. This isn't a conducive environment for the kinds of companies that rely on liquidity to do well. And the ARK Innovation ETF was looking encouraging in the middle of August and has given up the entire advance. We're back in the region of $40 and still with a downward bias. Bitcoin was up for most of the day, then moved into negative territory, then rebounded again. But I think it's important to highlight that we're right in the region of the big psychological 20,000 level, and the price has been static around this area for the last 4 days. It's a liquidity barometer. So, if liquidity continues to tighten, then downward pressure is more than likely in Bitcoin. Ethereum has this big event, the merge, coming up, and that's helping to support the price. And we've seen it retrace about half of the advance since mid-June, or excuse me, mid-July. And it's a potential area of support around the $1,500 level. But we still have a sequence of lower rally highs. And whatever else about the big attractions of the merge, or the translation or transmission from proof of stake to proof of work, well, it's the other way around, proof of work to proof of stake, then that's obviously going to be something that will help it in the longer term. And it's a big step in terms of the technology, but that has nothing to do with the value of the tokens. And the tokens are liquidity, at very much dependent on liquidity. Gold prices were down $13 today, so extending the decline and coming back into the $1,700 level. Bond yields continue to push higher. So this is bond investors willing to price in that inflation has not been beaten, that we still have an overheating economy, and that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to raise rates. So this has been a clear rebound from the region of the 200-day moving average, and the yield is now extending the move up and through the 3% level. So this is a really quite meaningful rebound in the yield, and obviously a decline in the price. And this enthusiasm that the bond market and indeed the currency markets are expressing for additional interest rate hikes hasn't really yet translated into a big breakout by the dollar. It's been going sideways now for 8 sessions, and it was in mildly negative territory today. And of course, the big reason for that is the euro. The euro is hovering here around parity. And it was closing out today just above it. The potential for the ECB to raise rates by 75 basis points has been fully priced in into the bond markets. So then the big question, or I guess the outstanding question, is whether the ECB will go for more than that. Will they go for a full percentage point in terms of the interest rate? If they do that, perhaps that will be enough to stem the decline in the euro. But it's going to have to at least break the sequence of lower rally highs and push up into one of the overhead trading ranges in order to really confirm that this is more than short-term steadying. I think one thing that is relevant is the weakness of the euro following its introduction was politically something that was not really n that they weren't really willing to tolerate. So there was intervention. And if we just go back and look at what that looked like in the year 2000, the dollar index went from 90 to 120 in the space of about 3 years. And the ECB and European governments did a whip around in 2001 and 2 to make sure to support the currency, because there was a lot of fear that it wasn't going to be a success at the time. And that was the equivalent at the time of multilateral intervention. And it also happened to coincide with the end of the big bull market on Wall Street. So then we had a prolonged period of dollar weakness and euro strength. So now we're in a rather similar situation where the dollar remains the strongest currency around. And there are clear advantages that the US has relative to the rest of the world. And that's certainly attracting interest. So, what is it that's going to turn this around? Well, first, it's going to be potentially intervention on behalf of the ECB to support the currency. Because obviously, a weak currency inflates asset prices, and particularly in terms of imports. And of course, everybody now knows how much of an influence imported energy has. It seems like people have to relearn lessons about once every 40 years. And of course, that coincides with the Kondratiev wave as well. But it does appear likely that there will have to be some form of clear intervention to support the euro. And then, of course, the Japanese yen is also back on its lows, and they don't seem to be particularly eager to support the currency either. And this looks like a really quite clear uptrend for the US dollar and a really substantial breakout from a prolonged range. But it is coming back into the region of the lows from back in 1998. So we're in rarefied territory here. Now, obviously, the yen has in the past, before the big bull market of the 1980s, been substantially weaker. But we're coming back up into levels now that haven't been seen in decades. And it is a big question whether the USA is going to continue to be comfortable with a strong dollar. But at the moment, they are because it helps to inhibit some of the inflationary pressures. And of course, the USA is also an energy exporter. And that's a fundamental benefit for both the currency and the economy. And of course, because there's inflationary pressures, it means that the Federal Reserve is going to have to work even harder to try and get them under control. So the S&P 500 is also extending its decline. This continues to look like a bear market, and the likelihood is that we're going to have recessions within the next while. Now, we've had two consecutive quarters of negative growth, and that's technically the bare minimum for a recession. But there's never been a recession without the PMI figures being below 50, and they're not below 50. So they're 52 and they're trending downwards, but they're not below 50. And that suggests that we've seen some negative growth because of lower imports, but the domestic economy here is still strong. And that suggests that we have further to go in terms of removing liquidity from this market. One thing that I was rather interested to see over the last few days was a rather old and in terribly bad condition vase sell in the UK for like £38,000. And that was way above the estimate. So it's something that was had been broken and put back together in a really shoddy manner, and they estimated it for something like 1,200, and it sold for £38,000. So that also suggests that there is a lot of Chinese money that's still floating around out there, trying to buy up bits of collectibles. And that continued appetite for collectibles, even subpar collectibles, is indicative of a lot of liquidity still floating around. So we're not yet at very tight financial conditions, but we're going to get there. And that suggests that yields will move higher from here, and we will see further valuation contraction on stock markets. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.